Welcome into another edition of the Zip 'em Up, excuse me, the Dana and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick. He is Dan. We're recording this on the evening of December 12th, Saturday, right after the Crosstown Shootout, where Xavier beat Crosstown rival Cincinnati 65-55. They jumped out to a 16-point lead at halftime, only scored 23 points in the second half, had to hang on a little bit. It was never really in question. The closest the game got was 5 with about 13 minutes to play, I believe. Or maybe, actually, I think it was about 10 minutes to play, but it quickly went back up to double digits, and Xavier ran away from there pretty much. Dan, overall, just the big picture, what was your number one takeaway from today?
Well, first of all, I've had a reflection session of my own here as I think back on the game. But I guess the biggest thing for me is, so it's 3 straight wins in this rivalry for Xavier, but it's 8 out of 10. And I just remember when I was a kid growing up, when Bob Huggins was the coach at UC, like the idea of Xavier beating UC seemed crazy. And so the fact that Xavier has kind of taken this rivalry by the neck and has dominated it over the last decade and maybe the last 20 years is pretty amazing. In terms of tonight's game, I thought my first takeaway was, and I know that there was a comment made on the message board which surprised me, I thought it was an absolutely elite atmosphere, one of the 5 best atmospheres I've experienced at Cintas Center. And I've been a season ticket holder since the building opened. I thought it was an incredible atmosphere, an incredible setting for college basketball. And, you know, to UC's credit, they made their run in the second half, and it was a pretty good spectacle, I thought. So I really enjoyed it.
Just real quick, let's talk about the crowd thing there, because I thought that was interesting. To me, I can see both sides of this. I completely thought that the crowd was outstanding. They were there early. They were incredibly loud before the tip and in all the early moments as Xavier was making that 10-1 run to start the game. They were in it at any moment that they needed to be in it or should have been in it. The crowd was incredibly loud. The only thing I would say is the flow of the game, the fact that Xavier was up double digits for the majority of the game, did kind of take away the opportunity for the crowd to get in it as much as I think they probably would have liked to. There just wasn't a ton of exciting moments. You know, there were a few, like when they got the lead down a little bit, down to 5, like I said, and Xavier made the run again, they got pretty excited and loud during that stretch. And then there was the big stretch at the beginning, and then obviously the end, as the time ticked off the clock, it was really loud. But yeah, I thought the crowd was outstanding, but at the same time, I get where they're coming from in terms of the flow of the game didn't lead to maybe the greatest atmosphere or as good as the atmosphere could have been. But I walked out at the same time as the recruits did, which, you know, Quentin Gooden, 2016 commit, several others who I put there on the message board if you want to go look at it. But as they were walking out, I was just kind of talking with Quentin and everything, and he was just like, yeah, I mean, that was crazy. That was nuts. He said he loved every second of it, and some people recognized him as he was walking in. So I think he had a really good time, as did the other recruits.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you and Brendel talked about on your pre-Crosstown Shootout podcast was if the seniors would step up. And I thought Remy Abel played a wonderful game. I thought in some ways his game was typified by that play in the second half where he made an incredible play to steal the ball from UC and lost his footing and the ball went out of bounds. But it just showed, I think he had chased his man through 3 screens, got a steal. He hit that huge 3 right off the bat to sort of set the tempo for the game. I thought Remy Abel was fantastic. And James Farr, we'll talk about him a little bit later, but I'm running out of superlatives for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. You know, you mentioned the senior thing that we talked about. Well, there wasn't that ridiculous breakout performance by any specific senior, but both of Xavier's seniors were really good. Remy hit 3 important threes. James was 4 for 4 from the field, grabbed 6 boards, finished with 9 points, 2 blocks. Was just really, I mean, almost flawless while he was in there, other than he missed 3 free throws. But the rest of his game was just superb. And they needed it because Jalen Reynolds wasn't able to play as many minutes tonight. Got in early foul trouble and just didn't seem to have it when he was in there for most of the game until the very end. But then you look at the other side for UC and Shaq Thomas. You know, he finished with 11 points and 3 assists, 5 rebounds on 5 of 11 shooting. He's 1 for 4 from 3, had 3 turnovers and had some decisions that I thought were just really poor. And then defensively, he got annihilated tonight. So really, I think when you sort of look at, and Farad Cobb, also a senior for UC, 11 points on 3 of 9 shooting. He was 3 of 8 from 3-point range. He had you know, a few moments there when UC was making their comeback where he gave him a little spark offensively. But yeah, I thought for the most part, Xavier's seniors provided more than UC's did, despite, you know, UC's guys scoring a little bit more. Xavier's guys were just more solid and more in tune. But let's talk about the big star of the night, and that was Miles Davis. Miles is a guy, to me, that has the right – he just has the right tools to be a big-game player, and we've seen that now throughout this year. We saw it last year, even in the shootout when he hit big shots. He's just – he's a guy who's, one, super tough. You know, he's not the most athletic, but he just – he gets it. He understands what toughness is. He understands how to play tough, which I didn't know. Like, when he came in, he didn't have that reputation. In fact, I think he was kind of a softer guy by most people's expectations. And more than anything, I think people just thought he didn't have the greatest work ethic because he was always a little out of shape. Now he's in phenomenal shape, and he's as hard of a worker as there is on this team when it comes to on the court and in these meaningful games. And the other thing is, he can really shoot the ball, and he has the stones to make big shots when it counts. He's done it. He did it last year in the shootout, like I talked about. And then tonight, 3 of 4 from distance. He was 7 of 10 from the field, 17 points, 3 assists, 3 rebounds, no turnovers, and a steal. What can you say about Miles Davis's performance tonight other than he was just simply outstanding? I mean, he was so efficient and so good.
I think one of the things is, and I don't have the breakdown in front of me, probably you do, but it seemed like he was the guy that hit all the big shots in the second half. Every time UC made a run to get it to 6 or to get it to 5 or to get it to 7, and you start to get, you know, you start to get a little bit nervous when you're sitting there in the stands, he seemed like the guy that they sought out. And in fact, there were times in the second half where I realized that Xavier was playing 2 or 3 minutes without Miles Davis on the floor, and it was a marked difference because Xavier was struggling more to find opportunities. So yeah, I mean, Miles, you know, and you're exactly right. I mean, even if you put aside the elite shooting ability, it's the fact the guy will just put his head down and get into the lane and get his shot to the rim. I mean, I know he's, what, 6'2", probably 200 pounds, 180, something like that.
Right.
But for some reason, the guy just has that knack of being able to get to the glass, no matter how big the guys he's going against are, no matter how, you know, how desperate the situation.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree, and that's been, you know, and then just Miles just being solid all the time, even on the defensive end where, you know, you thought he would be a liability when he came in as a defender, and he's actually turned into a really good defender. His progress as a player at Xavier has just been outstanding, but at the same time, one of the great things about Miles is he doesn't, like after the game, he was talking about Trayvon being the star of this team and their best scorer and talking about how they're a much better team when Jalen Reynolds is rolling. Like, he doesn't see himself as needing to be the go-to guy or the star of this team. Yet he can give you a 7 of 10 from the field, 17-point performance on any given night when you're playing your biggest rival. I mean, that is just that's an outstanding thing to have. And yeah. I think that's kind of just the story of Xavier's team right now is they have too many options. They have too many guys like that. And so let's talk about what UC did defensively for a second, because that was I did a ton of preview work on that before the game. And, of course, a lot of it ended up being not necessarily a huge factor because – UC didn't play their matchup zone.
Right.
But it was still relevant because all those things that I pointed out before the game is why I just didn't think UC could win if they played the zone. But at the same time, my other point to that is UC had played 70% zone this season, and they had played it in all the important games. So the Nebraskas, the George Washingtons, the Butlers that they've played, they played their matchup zone against those teams almost exclusively. Which made me feel like if you haven't tested your man-to-man hardly at all this season, it's a tough task to ask your kids to step in against a team like Xavier and do that right off the bat. That's what they did. It was probably the right call by Mick Cronin just because I don't think the matchup zone would have worked at all, as I pointed out before the game. But what happens is, so they focus on Trayvon Blewett. You know, they're able to put their best defender on Trayvon Blewett. They're able to offer help on Trayvon Blewett. Trayvon doesn't play well. Part of that's on him because I thought he got some looks and just missed them. He was 1 for 8 from the field. And a lot of that was because of UC. I thought they did a really good job of just being there on the catch and making it tough on him.
Yeah. They made it very tough on Trayvon.
Yeah. But the other side of that is, okay, so you focus on that guy. Well, then Xavier has Miles Davis, Edmund Sumner, Remy Abel. You know, they're two post players, a J.P. McCura who didn't really do much tonight. But then there's all these other options, and I think everyone that has watched this team feels confident in all those options being able to lead you in scoring on any given night and provide a lot. So that's where – I mean, end of the day, Byron and I were talking this at the end of the game. It's just Xavier's just better. Like, bottom line, they were just better. There wasn't really anything UC could have done, I don't think, to change – that other than they would have just needed some things to really go their way, and that didn't happen.
I thought it was interesting. I mean, you made reference to the fact that Trayvon struggled, and he did. I mean, it was his worst game of the season by a long shot on the offensive end. But by the way, Gary Clark, who a lot of people were talking about as being a mismatch against Trayvon at the four, threw up a donut in 29 minutes. And granted, some of that was because of the 1-3-1, which was extraordinarily effective tonight. But, I mean, I just think this was such a great team performance, and it exemplifies what this crew has done through 10 games. You know, your number one guy, the guy Miles Davis is talking about as the star of the team, doesn't really have a great offensive effort, and then you have six or seven other guys that step up. Jalen Reynolds gets two fouls before the two-minute mark, which was basically the most predictable thing of all time, although one of those was a complete garbage call, but we'll leave that aside. Yet Jalen comes back in at the end of the game, and he has three or four really nice finishes that keep UC at bay, including at one point, Rick, I'm sure you'll remember this, off the dumbass play where he didn't make a clean catch. Recovers, reposts, and just destroys his man with a right-handed baby hook. That was just, I think Xavier was up 11 at the time, and that may have been the single shot that killed off the game. So I'm so impressed, and a lot of the way, and some of it is that the adversity that the team had to deal with in the second half, with UC coming out like a house on fire, being 10-0 run, at a halftime, getting it down to six, getting it down to five later on in the half, and responding every time was very heartening.
But I think that's the biggest takeaway overall about this Xavier team at this point after this game is just that they're so solid in all the aspects where you need to be solid. Defense, rebounding on both ends of the court, sharing the basketball, getting to the foul line and making them, that really – Xavier didn't have, I said, you know, things didn't go UC's way enough for them to pull off this upset, but really Xavier didn't have anything go its way hardly either. When you think about Trayvon Blewett didn't have, really Trayvon Blewett had a bad game on the offensive end. You bring up a great point about his defensive efforts because he was paired up one-on-one with Gary Clark in the post multiple times in the first half and either forced him to kick it out or forced two misses from the field. So I thought he was great defensively. That is a really good point that I forgot to bring up. But Xavier didn't control the glass. It was 32-32 in total boards. UC had 11 offensive rebounds to Xavier's 10. You know, one thing Xavier did a really good job of is not turning the ball over, which is what UC's defense lives off of, is turnovers and that creating some offense for them. And UC did have 16 turnovers, a lot of those coming in the first half, which was a big difference in the game. But
the two biggest moments where UC got some momentum were off of Xavier turnovers. Those were the few times where Xavier did turn the ball over, that five-point run.
Right at the end of the first half.
Right before halftime.
Yeah.
And then they also had it during the 10-0 run at the beginning of the second half.
But that's what, you know, those things don't go Xavier's way. And then like you said, there's the adversity. There's the couple UC runs where they had the opportunity. There's the Chris Mack technical going into a timeout when UC was only down 11 and legitimately still had plenty of time to get back in the game. I thought that could have been a turning point.
Let me ask you about that. What was your take on that? Because obviously I sit 100,000 miles away from the court. I don't know exactly what happened, but it shocked me that Chris would put himself in a situation to get a technical at that stage of the game, given the score and time situation.
And that's how I felt. And I don't think, if you asked Chris, I don't think he felt he probably deserved the technical. But at the same time, to me, it was just one of those things where I think he was too wrapped up in the game because it was a call on Remy Abel, which I didn't feel was a good call necessarily. But at the same time, it was kind of just a rant.
Right.
It wasn't like a significant play. It was an underneath out of bounds type situation.
It was like a second chance situation.
Yeah,
a
loose ball.
Bounds.
Right, an iffy call to begin with. Like it's a complete judgment thing. It's just one where it's like, you know, that's not one you really should be arguing that hard at that moment,
right,
with an 11-point lead. And Chris was, you know, I don't know if he said one of the magic words, but he certainly was a little out of the coach's box and kind of really animated about that call. So, you know, if you're going to act that way, you're putting yourself in a position to get teed up. I thought Mick Cronin had a horrible technical in the first half and put his team in a really bad spot early in the game. So both coaches did that. I didn't think either technical was necessarily like – they didn't look like huge issues from the coaches that, you know, you could have maybe gotten away with not calling the technical there. At the same time, both coaches put themselves in the position to have it called. And again,
by the way, it reminded me a little bit about 2 years ago at U.S. Bank Arena when Mick got a terrible technical with the game starting to slip away from his team, down like 9 in the first half. He gets a stupid technical. Xavier turns it into about a 6-point possession, and all of a sudden they're 20 points down by halftime. I think that was kind of history repeating itself. In fact, a lot of things reminded me of that game 2 years ago. Similar situation where Xavier's inside guys were neutralized with foul trouble early, and yet they hit enough threes, and UC just didn't seem to have the defensive game plan to stop Xavier.
Yeah, I would agree. And like you said, I mean, just the maturity of this team in handling those adverse situations was impressive. And the way they just keep playing, you know, Billy Donlin mentioned it after the Wright State game. It's like they miss shots. They're like professionals. They keep playing. It doesn't affect them. They don't get two up or two down. And that's exactly what you saw in today's game. It was a very professional, business-like win for Xavier. So we talked about Miles Davis. Let's talk a little bit about James Farr, Dan, and just – you know, we were talking before we went on air, and yeah, I mentioned his stat line, 4-for-4 from the field, 6 rebounds, an assist, and 2 blocks. He's, as a rebounder, he's as good as I've ever watched live. I can't think of another name that comes to mind that specifically when it comes to rebounding that is better than James Farr at the college level.
I mean, when he came to Xavier, the way he was described is he was a 6'6 or 6'7 3/4 that had nice shooting range, that was kind of regarded as a guy that could hit the 15-foot jumper, basically, like a face-up 4. And he has transformed himself into an elite rebounder. And there was a point late in the game where he got a wide-open look at a 3 and he turned it down. And that was like, it was like, well, James, I mean, you've earned it at this point.
All right.
The dude gets rebounds that I have no idea how any human being can get.
And it happens
and
once a game.
In zone or out of zone, it doesn't matter. He comes into the game, it doesn't matter if he's in the 1-3-1 zone defense or if he's in the pack line man-to-man. It doesn't matter. He gets every rebound that's close to him. And that, I think, was one of the most I guess the second half of the game was so surprising because UC was getting offensive rebounds, and it was such a shock, having watched Xavier for 9.5 games, that the other team was competing on the glass. And this is one of the things that I actually mentioned, I think, before the game on the message board. It was like, this is the first team Xavier will play all year that they can't just completely punk on the offensive glass. But Farr just – I've never seen anything like him in terms of a rebounder at Xavier. He just has that knack, and he's got the desire, too. I think rebounding is partially about positioning. It's partially about athleticism, but partially it's about desire. And he is just excelling in the role that he finds himself in his senior year, and it's fantastic for the team. Because, obviously, I think Jalen, you know, is a superb talent, but can you really count on him for 30 minutes a game? No, you can't. And to have a weapon like James Farr on the bench, it's stunning. And also, we should mention Sean O'Mara, who played wonderfully in the first half as well.
Yeah, he had a great short little stretch there. But, yeah, James just – he came in – you're talking about how he was billed when he came in, and you're pretty much – I think you hit the nail on the head for the most part of how we were talking about him. But he had this vision of himself. He had always floated on the perimeter and taken jump shots and just used athleticism for, you know, like runouts in transition or maybe an offensive board here or there. But – as he continued growing and, you know, got to like 6'10 and really just kind of became this very tall, you started realizing how big he was. Xavier kind of was just like, man, we need to get him tougher. We need to get him more physical. But he played so stiff and so straight up and just played with no leverage his first two seasons in a Xavier uniform, to where he was almost useless when it came to battling for boards or posting up at all on the offensive end. He had zero ability to catch the ball on the post, hold his position, make a strong move, and finish. He had zero back-to-the-basket game whatsoever. And he's now to the point where Jalen Reynolds can't guard him in practice. He can score on just about anyone in the country because he's so damn big that if he gets position on you, he's usually able to finish it off. And the other thing that you mentioned about him is that he's bought into this role, which is so true, because like you mentioned, he passed up a wide open 3-day. I mean, he was 4 for 4, and yet he only took 4 shots. He played more minutes. He could have taken other shots, but he's completely bought into this. Like, his first 2.5 years at Xavier, because the first half of last year I thought he struggled and was still doing this, he was looking to be a jump shooter. That was what he was convinced he needed to do. Somewhere midway through last year, they got it through his head that his goal should be to be the best rebounder in the Big East, and now that's all he seems to care about, is that and this team winning. He's been great defensively, just not enough you can say about James Farr. And I'll also end with this about Farr. Chris Mack said in postgame that there was a moment, and I watched this happen, I actually tweeted something about it, but he had Farr waiting at the table, and he said it was because Jalen had made a mistake on the defensive end. They're kind of worried, you know, it's close at the end, they just want to get Farr in there, and then Jalen came down and got that and one against Octavius Ellis late in the game. That was a big sort of momentum thing, and people were pumped up. Max said James looks at him and says, let's leave him in there. And Mac was like, you know, okay, I agree. So he pulled him back up and put James back on the bench. And then Jalen went on that run and played a really good next 4 or 5 minutes. But it just goes to show you that, like, not a lot of kids would say, yeah, I don't want to go into the game right now. But James is sitting there saying, I know Jalen Reynolds. He just got an and one. He's fired up. Let's give him another play or two and see if he's going to get going here, because when he is, we're a better team, and he's even better than I am. And
yeah, I mean, when you talk about one of the things that Xavier fans are obsessed with is this idea, the kid that comes in unheralded as the freshman and ends up a star, and B.J. Raymond is the one that always comes to mind.
No, Jason Love
yeah. is number two, and now James Farr is officially number three as far as I'm concerned.
So on that note, here's the text I got earlier from our good buddy and old friend Doug Tift. He wanted to know this morning, who benefits more if he had a hypothetical redshirt as a freshman and received a fifth year of eligibility, James Farr or Jason Love? That's a tough call. Probably Jason Love, but man, has Farr come on like gangbusters this year.
Yeah, if Love had stayed another year, I'm trying to think of the circumstances. Well, I actually think Farr might benefit more, because next year he would be the number one guy, because we're assuming Jalen will be gone.
Right.
It would be James, Rasheed, and Sean as the inside guys with incredible talent on the perimeter. Trayvon with another year, JP with another year, Quentin, Edmund. I think James. I'd go with James.
That's a really good point. I didn't really think of it as much from the standpoint of what they'd be left with that next year. So that's an interesting point. I like where you're at on that. So Jason Love, that following season was the...
Yeah, his fifth year would have been...
Two Holloway, Mark Lyons, Jamel,
really
Kenny, and Dante.
Team. Yeah. Really good team, but they had Freeze on that team. And that was a team that didn't have much depth in the backcourt. That was the year they had like three guys for three positions, and
yep.
You know, Kevin Feeney was playing significant minutes for a period of time as a backup guard. So,
yep.
That was the year that like Martin and Redford both were ineligible or hurt. So,
yeah, Redford tore his ACL that year. So
exactly.
Yep, that was fun. So,
and yeah, Rick, what? I mean, obviously, I come at it from the fan perspective. From the media perspective, from the person that's been involved in the hype this week, how do you feel about how things stand in this rivalry at this point? I mean, do you think we're at a fever pitch? Do you think this is as good as it's been?
Yeah, I do. And a lot of that is because I think there's stability in both programs right now. It's past the point of the little brother thing, and Mick talked about that in his postgame today. Now, whether that ever existed or not, or to what extent, I don't know. But we're definitely past the point of anybody even be like, there isn't even a UC fan that could claim right now that this game is bigger to X or X's little brother anymore. I mean, just looking at the recent tournament success and the way the two programs recruit and the amount of money that Xavier's investing in their program versus what UC's investing or not investing, as I'm hearing.
Hold on, Rick. There was a very well thought out article on 24/7 about the UC Xavier recruiting divide that made it very clear that all of Xavier's recent success is based on lucky seeding.
I didn't read it well enough to get to exactly extract that, but yeah.
Well, follow up with Snow. He'll let you know.
Okay. I think anyway to answer your question. I think it's in a great spot because these two programs are both at the same point in terms of, you know, Xavier has a little bit better position in terms of the way they're funded and the conference that they're in, but they're both in a similar situation. Both have the same ability to succeed, I think, at this point. So it puts you in a really good spot. And then you have two good coaches who have stayed there for a while and could be there for a while longer in Chris Mack and Mick Cronin. And I think that really helps. So, The shootout was great. The fan support is great on both sides. The two teams being ranked, I still can't believe this was only the second time they were both ranked going into the shootout. But yeah, I think this is as good as the shootout gets.
Really hard to believe that that's true, but
it is. Dan,
let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
The next year's crosstown shootout, I want to put you on record right now. What building will that game be played in?
Fifth Third.
I thought that was the point, that they couldn't play there.
That is. In public, that's what's being said right now. I don't think they have the funding.
Oh, I see.
From what I'm hearing behind the scenes. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think any of it's going to happen at the moment. So
really?
I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that in terms of like that's 100% done, but this is a podcast and I'm like rumblings behind the scenes right now from what I'm hearing is there's a chance that may not happen and there's some issues with the funding. So I don't know other than if it's not going to be at Fifth Third, it's going to be at US Bank Arena. But
yeah, it makes absolutely no sense, any of the other options. I mean, the Gardens can't support even a 5,000-person crowd, let alone 10,000 people at this point.
Yeah, it's just not made for that.
And U.S. Bank Arena has a pre-existing relationship with UC over the years. I think that's the only thing that makes sense. And NKU, I mean, their arena is wonderful. It's gorgeous. It is state-of-the-art. But it seats, what, 5,000?
No, it's like 78. I think so.
78.
Yeah, it's very similar to Xavier. It's very similar to Xavier. It just doesn't have the back wall. It's opened on that end.
So maybe you could play most of your home games at NKU, but I don't think you can play the crosstown shootout there.
Yeah, UC could get away with playing there if they need to, especially with the attendance they typically get. But the crosstown shootout would be a tough sell there. And I don't think it would. I don't think there's any reason they would go away from US Bank Arena with, like you said, they already know what they're doing there, which you know as well as I do, the administration and the people who have to run that stuff don't like, they want to make it as easy as they can on themselves when it comes to putting on this event. So it's already going to be a fiasco since they have to move it. US Bank Arena is really the only option to me. But I think there's a decent chance that it may not be moved at all. So.
All right, Rick. Xavier, 10-0, 12 in the polls, 9 in KenPom. I think the needle has been moved as far as expectations for this team. And I mean, I was reading an article by Rob Dowster from College Basketball Talk on NBC Sports, talking. You know, maybe we need to. And I think Gary Parrish made the same point. Maybe we need to be talking about Xavier as a national championship contender at this point. I mean, is that realistic talk?
Well, here's the thing I would say. Xavier picked a really good year to be really good. This year's Xavier team would not be a national contender. We wouldn't be having these conversations if they had to compete with last year's Wisconsin and last year's Kentucky and last year's Duke. But there are no teams like that this season. There are no elite college basketball teams from what I've seen. I think Kentucky is probably the most talented, and they just got waxed at UCLA last week. So in that regard, I think Xavier's picked a really good year in the fact that there's a lot of parity at the top. Are they, you know, better than Michigan State and better than UK and all this? Right now they're playing better than some of those teams, I think. Certainly better than UK. But at the same time, without playing against them and seeing how the matchups work out, it's tough to say. I don't think this UC team, to be quite honest, is as good as UC fans did coming into the season and probably as good as they were ranked here with the last couple weeks.
You disagree with Chad Brendel that they're better than the San Antonio Spurs?
Just a little bit. I never understood why they thought a bunch of guys who were all the same guys from last year's team were going to be so much better. I get the guys getting a year older because Xavier has the same thing going on, but it's not like they were just a bunch of freshmen becoming sophomores. You know, there were a lot of guys, you know, Farad Cobb's a JUCO guy who was at UC. We know who he is. We know who Octavius Ellis is. We know who Coriante DeBerry is. There wasn't a ton of upside for this team to improve on what they did last year. I didn't think they traded out Jacob Evans for Jermaine Sanders, which is an upgrade, but as you saw tonight, now Jacob Evans was hurt. He was hampered by a sprained ankle, but I don't think he's, you know, the difference maker that makes them all of a sudden a dynamic offensive team. My thing with UC is they still struggle to score against good teams in games that matter. And for some reason, they're not quite as good defensively this year as they were last season. So,
UC's season, I think, to a certain extent, as far as seeding goes, is going to be decided in the next 10 days because they play VCU and they play Iowa State, and then they play a whole lot of dross in their conference schedule. It's sort of funny how the tables have turned over the last 5 years, where it used to be that Xavier had to pack in all their good games before conference play started when they started playing Fordham 15 straight times, and now UC is the one that plays garbage.
Right, 265 in the RPI in their conference. Right. That's rough. Yeah.
Tulane and Central Florida, who, by the way, both beat UC last year. But anyway.
So one of the big things, though, going back to whether Xavier is a national title contender or whether, you know, where they're at now is, even when you have those types of teams that can compete for that, which maybe Xavier's had a team or two in the past that with the right draw could have made a serious run at it with their talent, you have to get the right seed because a lot of the NCAA tournament is about matchups and luck and catching teams at the right time. So getting the right seed is important. Getting a top four seed is how you win the NCAA tournament. Are there exceptions to that rule? Yes. But for the most part, those are the teams that win it. Xavier's never put themselves in that position. And really, since I've been covering the team, they especially haven't, because Chris Mack's teams have always gotten better as the season have gone on, but they've always struggled early in the season away from home. This team hasn't done that, and to me, that's the biggest difference. Whether they're a ton better than some of those teams in the past, I'm not sure. I think they certainly look, they pass the eye test right now, but the biggest thing is their resume right now is just so good. With what they've done through this non-conference, they've torn through it, and now if they do what they did in last year in the Big East, they're already better than a six seed. So I mean, like, they've set themselves up really, really well, and this game they didn't need, but now that they have it, it's like, wow, their resume is looking really good.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing else to say. My point has always been to make the Final Four, you either have to be a one seed or beat a one seed, and Xavier's in a situation right now where if they win the Big East, why not?
What do you think? I don't know if you've seen Villanova much, but do you think Xavier should be considered the favorite in the Big East or Villanova?
Yeah, I watched the Oklahoma game, which it was played under weird circumstances, and Villanova played very poorly. But so far this season, one of the things, 3-point shooting, which has been Villanova's stock and trade the last two or three years, they haven't been that good, have they?
No, they haven't shot the ball well at all. But that's why I still think when you look at this Villanova team, I think eventually they start making shots and start shooting it better. And until Xavier can prove that they can go to Villanova and win or beat Villanova here at Xavier, I can't put Xavier ahead of them, but it's not the foregone conclusion. Like, when you look at the matchups, last year the matchups didn't work out. I didn't think there was any chance Xavier could ever beat Villanova. You look at the matchups this year, it works out a lot better for Xavier. In fact, I might like their lineup better. So I think it's legitimate that Xavier could win the Big East this year without question. I'd still say Villanova is the favorite going into conference play, but Xavier's right there with them, and they're without question the number two team in the conference now, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, I look at what's coming up, and Xavier gets they get exam week off this week. They got Auburn on Saturday. Not a particularly good team. Wake Forest is going to be an interesting test away. I think both you and I predicted that Xavier would lose that game going into the season.
I predicted a win. You and Snow both predicted a loss.
But, I mean, but then New Year's Eve, noon, at the Pavilion, Xavier at Villanova, it's a fascinating matchup.
I mean, and to Xavier, what other game is their Super Bowl at this? Like, that is the game for them at this point. And, you know, I don't know how Villanova looks at it, but I have to think with the way Xavier's players were embarrassed against this Villanova team, in especially that game in Madison Square Garden when they, you know, felt good about themselves and everything. It was such a great weekend, and then they just get absolutely trampled in that Big East championship game against Villanova. I have to think Xavier's going to be ready for this one, and they're going to show up with and put their best foot forward from what we've seen from this team so far this year. So I think that game is really interesting all of a sudden. And if they go there and win, I mean, my goodness, we're starting to look for plane tickets to destination cities for the NCAA tournament at that point.
Well, let's finish on this, Rick. Pat Kelsey, former associate head coach at Xavier, he tweeted something about a week ago. You wrote an article about it, about this being the most talented Xavier team of all time.
Yeah, what did you think about that? I wanted to get your take on all that. We haven't talked since then.
Well, the way I was looking at it was, I actually was thinking that the one team that I might say was close was David West's senior year, when they had West, Chalmers, Sato, and David Young, all of whom were NBA draft picks. But that team kind of, they lost in the second round to the defending national champion Maryland in a game that wasn't particularly close for most of it. The other option would be, of course, the team that went to the Elite Eight and lost to UCLA with Drew Lavender, C.J. Anderson, B.J. Raymond, Justin Cage, Justin Dolman, Josh Duncan, and that team was incredibly talented. But this team has pros, and that I think is the difference. Edmund Sumner's probably going to play in the NBA. Trayvon Blewett's probably going to play in the NBA. Jalen Reynolds is probably going to play in the NBA. So I think there's an argument.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, you put like maybe a Remy Abel on that team, you know, those teams we're talking about in the past, some of those really good teams, and we're probably looking at him as one of the NBA prospects, the guy a lot of the fans are talking about. Oh, he has a chance to play in the NBA, you know, because fans are always a little over optimistic about the guys on their team. I remember a lot of that in Xavier history, on the message boards and stuff. Fans always thought certain guys had a chance that probably didn't. And now you look at this team, and Remy's a complete afterthought almost on this team. And like even Snow was saying on the message board, he's had college coaches, and I've heard the same thing, and scouts say that they think J.P. McCura has a chance to be an NBA prospect down the line. So this team does have a lot of talent on it, and the way the staff has them playing at this point, it's tough to argue with all the good things that are being said about them in the national press.
Well, it's one thing when Gary Parrish says it, or so, or Dick Vitale, or you or I say it, because we have, you know, we watch the team, we're invested. When somebody like Pat Kelsey says it, who has a lengthy institutional memory with
he has no reason to say that right now either.
Right. I mean, I think that's meaningful.
It gave me pause. Like I said, that's why I wrote the article about it, because it caught me a little off guard when he said that, because it didn't seem right for him to be saying something like that. And I was like, man, this This just doesn't seem like something he would say. He must be taking that to heart and saying it seriously. And it's kind of a weird thing for a college coach to say about another college team, even if it is their old college team. So I thought that was very interesting, and it's kind of tough to argue with. Dan, unless you have any other topics to bring up that are relevant, let's finish up with this. What is your favorite Crosstown Shootout memory? I don't think we had one that's going to stack up there today, but and by memory I mean game, not just like single moment. But what is your favorite shootout moment?
Wow.
Do you want me to go first while you think for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
So mine has to be 96, the number one in the country, number two in their own city, Lenny Brown. And the biggest, like the shot and that sound bite are just so big and it's so ubiquitous with this rivalry, I guess. It's all you think about when you talk about UC Xavier. I like that part of it, and but also just the Lenny Brown, the two-handed push below his waist all game as he's hitting big shot after big shot. That game was – everything about that game I loved when I was a little kid, and it's part of what made me really fall in love with this rivalry and made it my favorite sports day of the year. My second, and it'd be a very close second, would be the – stay tuned, call up your friends, number one's going to be knocked off, baby.
Okay. That was going to be my number one.
So, oh, let's hear it.
Can I talk about that?
Rip it.
Because today, when they recognized Darnell Williams in the crowd, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because that was it, 99. Darnell Williams coming back on a reconstructed knee, scoring 19 points in the first half, just absolutely annihilating a legitimately great UC team.
And remember Darnell just standing on the media table afterwards, just screaming at the fans?
Yeah.
That was the best.
Well, what I remember about it is Darnell was so exhausted in the second half, he could barely play. But one of the things that I remember about it is that was the last Crosstown Shootout at the Gardens, and there was a situation in the first half where UC had a freshman named DeMar Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Who ended up being a lottery pick by the Atlanta Hawks, and he was a hugely touted freshman, and you saw him at the free throw line, and he was scared S-less. and I think his first free throw barely drew iron. That was a game of incredible intensity, and a freshman, David West, stripping the ball off Kenyon Martin in the last 2 minutes, Kevin Fry's run out to finish the game, that was the best.
Yeah.
That game was a complete epic. The 96 game that you're talking about was fantastic, and it was awesome, and Lenny Brown's shot was great, but the 99 game was like a Greek it was like a Shakespearean tragedy in five acts.
Yeah.
That game was incredible.
Well, that was the thing. The 99 one from start to finish, you're probably right, was the better, more entertaining game. I mean, I remember we were watching that. I didn't have cable growing up, so we were watching that at my great-grandmother's house. And she did not take too kindly to Kenyon Martin flexing in the camera early on. So we heard she was going to write letters to Cincinnati and all types of things about that. So I remember enjoying that throughout the game, her commentary. And then the 1-3-1 defense. That was another thing that I kind of flashed back to that when I was talking, doing the preview and thinking about Xavier playing a 1-3-1 in this one. Remember they had Lloyd Price and Darnell Williams just were so good in that zone in that game. And they had never played, I mean, Skip never played that 1-3-1 at all and just brought it out in that game. And Price's steal at the end that led to Fry's layup. And the windmill arm celebration by Fry is always an image I'll remember when I think of that game. So. Yeah, those are it for me.
That was the first game with the gray uniforms too.
Oh yeah, and I loved the gray, but those were the Reebok gray, which were just so amazing. Those are so nice. I don't like anything Reebok, but those jerseys were just incredible. Reebok was weirdly good at making jerseys, although they sucked at everything else.
Well, we probably should let the people go at this point. So if there was only a phrase that would describe Xavier winning the Crosstown Shootout.
We're a tougher team. We're grown men over here.
That possibly involves the use of an appliance or a clothing item.
We went out there and zipped them up at the end of the game. That's our motto, zip them up, and that's what we just did today.